creating cultural awareness and understanding. This is Culture Click. Culture Click is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University.
From early ages, young boys are socialized to act out normative masculine scripts. They are taught that being a man means to be competitive, controlling, tough, and emotionally restrictive. Research has shown that men are socialized to perceive sexual promiscuity as a marker of personal success and self-worth. Today on Culture Click, we delve further into the issues that produce an environment of sexual violence with Countering Hegemonic Masculinity. This talk is with special guest Dr. Jonathan Luke Wood from San Diego State University. Dr. Wood brought his research on the subject to present his findings in cooperation with Dr. Mary Jo Klinker from Winona State University's Women and Gender Studies program. I'm Terry Tenseth, inviting you to learn more now about countering hegemonic masculinity on Culture Click.
Good evening. The conversation we're going to have tonight is a serious one. Title of this presentation is Countering Hegemonic Masculinity. And what we're really focusing on here is the role of this type of masculinity in fostering climates and conditions that are conducive and support violence, particularly sexual violence and aggressiveness against women. So the topic itself is heavy, but it's a necessary conversation to have for a number of reasons. It's also part of a national conversation that's going on right now. Many colleges and universities have been under fire for not doing enough to report sexual assaults and sexual violence against women on their campus. And many of them have been exploiting loopholes that are out there in terms of mandated reporting that have allowed them to do so. One example would be where a sexual assault occurs just off campus with students, but it's handled by the local police so they don't report it. But it's clearly a campus-related incident. And there's a number of occurrences that have happened like that have really placed a light on this topic. My first experience when I was a freshman at Sac State, I attended college at California State University, Sacramento. And I remember that when I was in the dorms that first semester, there were three rapes that occurred. One of them I remember vividly. I was walking outside with a couple friends, and this car sped up. And I remember these guys jumped out really quick. They grabbed this girl. They literally threw her in the bushes. They jumped in the car, and they sped off. And most folks who saw it were just kind of like frozen for a second, like, what just happened? And it had been a student, freshman student, first week of school, who had been at a party, been sexually abused. I think they had drugged her and threw her in the bushes. So we know that these kind of things occur, and they happen a lot more than we probably realize or would want to recognize. And so it's something that we do have to talk about. So I have students students this past summer who actually helped work on a project where we were exploring campus-level predictors of reporting of sexual assaults. And one of the things we know, again, is that colleges and universities don't report this like they should. And so it was kind of a very difficult thing in that we were measuring whether or not the campus reported it, but based upon the theoretical framework that we had, higher levels of reporting were actually a beneficial thing and a good thing because it meant that more reporting was occurring, because the assumption was, based upon the data that's out there, that so few rapes and assaults are actually reported, that in that case, it was viewed as a positive marker of institutional responsibility, which just goes to show how difficult a conversation like this can be. So I believe that the culture that we have that supports this, really we can point to hegemonic masculinity, and it's a certain type of masculinity that really fosters conditions that are supportive of this kind of aggressiveness and assault against women. Now, in terms of masculinity, we know that from early on, boys receive messages about what it means to be a man. And those messages originate from a number of places. It comes from the schools they attend, with the teachers that they interact with, administrators and staff. It comes from their male peers who give them very clear messages about what they perceive as being a man. It comes from their families. Comes from fathers or father-like figures. And it also comes from the media. And what happens is these messages about what it means to be a man teach and reinforce these perceptions and what we call kind of masculine scripts through observation, through verbal cues, nonverbal cues, and through imitation. So a young boy may see what other people are doing, other boys are doing, older boys, his father, a father-like figure, and then want to imitate that behavior in order to demonstrate that he himself is on the path to being a man or is a man. And so, unfortunately, you know, there's some aspects of masculinity that can be positive, but there's also a lot of it that's not. And we're specifically talking about really those challenges that can occur that happen as a result of kind of the negative aspect of this masculinity. But one thing that it does is it creates a culture that fosters sexual aggressiveness and violence. So let's talk about what those influences look like. So family influence. So I'm going to touch on a few of these right here. Families teach social expectations and norms about gender. This happens early on. Boys are bought blue clothes and trucks and G.I. Joes and guns. Girls are bought dresses and pink and dolls and, you know, and it's something that's pretty commonplace. So I don't think this is a shocker to anyone. I mean, I know that when I had my two children, I have a daughter and a son, that when gifts were bought for us, they were very gender specific, quote unquote. And it was very clear what's meant for Luke and what's meant for my daughter, Mayan. And my daughter has probably a closet full of dresses that have been pink princess dresses that have been bought for her by her grandmothers. And my son has a box full of guns and balls. And these are by family members who have wanted to, you know, get a gift that seems appropriate, but at the same time are also, you know, reinforcing, you know, messages that are very specific. And then here's this quote from Harris and Harper. Frank Harris is my colleague at San Diego State. We co-direct the Minority Male Community College Collaborative together. His research is focused on college men and masculinities, and mine is really focused on college men and achievement. And several years ago, we combined our research trajectories to look at the role of masculinity and identity in achievement among men. And as a result of that, we've had a number of publications, but this is one that came before that time that he did with Sean Harper that I think is a good quote. Children learn through their development that domestic duties are culturally associated with women and femininities. Conversely, men and masculinities are associated with duties that represent physical rigor, strength, and power. In fact, there's a lot of work that's been done looking at how women are feminized, and especially women of color, and looks at like early childhood education, how they're like, you know, with a teacher, you know, there's always got to be a teacher's helper, and how these are the individuals who oftentimes become the teacher's helper because they're being socialized for domestic roles, right? And very specific roles that would not only maintain the gender order, but the racial order as well. Okay, fathers and sons. Now, this is where a lot of this comes. So father, son, and male son-like relationships are critical to influencing perceptions of masculinity. Fathers teach what has been taught to them, and oftentimes what has been taught to them is not healthy perceptions of masculinity. It's traditional. The man is in charge. The man controls the money. The woman listens. The woman cooks. The woman cleans. These are things that have been taught and passed down, and as a result, men socialize their sons to have the same views. And so You know, I can even think of my experience with my own father, where times that he felt that maybe I didn't act in a way that he perceived as being man, he would retort quickly, "Oh, you're acting like a mama's boy," or "go to your mother," or something along those lines that would demonstrate that you're not acting like you should be. This is the standard. You're not reaching it, so you're less than. Why don't you go somewhere else? And sometimes, you know, oftentimes, I should say, these messages are unconscious, but that doesn't mean that they're not powerful. In fact, in reality, unconscious messages, we know through research on microaggressions, are even more powerful sometimes. Fathers hope that their sons will learn that these perceptions of what it means to be a man and carry these things out as well, and that they will become attuned to to a male hierarchy and male privilege. So what many fathers don't want to see is that their son acting like a wuss or a sissy, right? That for many fathers, there's a natural reaction like, "Oh my gosh, what are you doing? Stop holding your hand like that," or "stop standing like a girl." You know, there's things that are said to boys that really reinforce this. And they're taught through the toys they have, the games that they purchase them, the punishments, the way that they even punish them. Maybe for their daughters, they might scold them like this, but with their sons, they're hitting them and say, "Don't cry, take it like a man." There's also sports is one clear way in which men are socialized. So sports is a domain where you can express your physical rigor, your aggressiveness, your competitiveness, your toughness. And so fathers oftentimes push their sons into sports where they can do this and display their manhood. And it's also, of course, reinforced by peers. Peers intensely, in fact, the literature says that peers, possibly even more so than any other group, extend and reinforce messages that they receive from home. And as a man, as a young boy, one of the worst things that you can be called is a girl, a sissy, a fag, a bitch, a punk bitch. Add two of them together. These are things that as a young man, if you're called these things, those are immediately fighting words. And why are they fighting words? Because it's getting and digging specifically at what your identity is supposed to be. You're not living up to the standard. Therefore, you're lesser than. And then, of course, if a man or a young boy is acting in a way that men see as being weak, what's the retort? I have the up. What's the first one that comes? Man up. Buck up. Cowboy up, right? We got all kinds of ups. And they connote the same underlying theme, which is be a man, which means be tough. Stop crying. Don't be a sissy. We also know that physicality is associated with the male hierarchy. So this is where sports comes into play. The guy who is perceived as the man is the guy who can throw the football the farthest or can hit the hardest. Or who can dunk the ball. It's associated with, oftentimes, with these physical aspects of what it means to be a man, as opposed to other aspects such as dependability and loyalty and working hard and determination. Oftentimes, at a young age, it's more so associated with physical competitiveness. And when we see boys engage in ways that are negative, oftentimes instead of correcting them and telling them, "No, you need to stop doing that," you know, "Oh, well, they're fighting." Well, boys will be boys. And we dismiss the behavior. In fact, I hate that phrase more than anything else in my life. I hate it when I'm getting angry right now. I hate it when people say boys will be boys. Because when I was a young boy, because I lived in an all-white town, it was just me and my brother. We were the only African Americans other than one other kid in town. And the students in the school used to hate us. They used to hate us for no other reason other than the fact that we were black. So it was an economically depressed town, so people just had built-in anger, and we were an easy target for it. And so every day after school, from the time I was in second or third grade to the time I was in sixth grade, me and my brother, as soon as the bell got out, ran home. Because if we didn't, we would be fighting. That was every day for us. And I remember one time, finally, and this took a lot, Because, you know, as a young child, you don't want to go to your parents and say, hey, kids are picking on me at school. One time I remember I went to my mother and my father. My dad said, first of all, I'll kick their asses. Who are they? That was his response. But my mom's like, come on, chill out. Let's just go talk to the principal. And they go and talk to the principal, and the principal's immediate response was, oh, well, boys will be boys. Then the next year, my mom went back to him. Oh, well, boys will be boys. Then I started complaining, boys will be boys. And that was the response. And it really wasn't until me and my brother started fighting and winning, not just fighting, you know, that's tough when there's a group of people, just so you know, but started fighting and winning, that then they said, okay, well, we're not gonna do that anymore. And being, of course, uncompetitive and not doing these things and not rising to these standards can have deleterious effects, because then you become ridiculed by your peers. Schools, of course, also reinforce this gender socialization. Unfortunately, the vast majority of K-12 teachers are women. They also happen to be white women. And of course, for young boys, if you attended the session earlier, you may have heard me say that school becomes a structure where it's a woman's structure because there's no men there. Therefore, if you engage as a young boy in school, you're acting like a wuss, a sissy, a punk, right? So academic achievement in school is viewed as being incompatible with masculinity. And instead, coolness is viewed as being more important. There's also the force behind the conversations that take place among boys in school that shapes perceptions, and this happens early on, about sexuality and sexual discourse. So, for example, must participation in highly charged sexual conversations. You hit that, you tap that, you get that pussy. These are conversations that guys have with each other, right? And this happens early on, and it becomes a thing where if you don't engage in this conversation, then there's something must be wrong with you. You must be a bitch. Are you gay? That's how those conversations go. Someone correct me if I'm wrong. Guys in the room, correct me if I'm wrong. That's what it looks like. I got thumbs up. So it's also extended by the media. In capitalist, heteropatriarchal societies, we know that in the media, we see that women are objectified, okay? They are portrayed in a dehumanized fashion, particularly in music videos, and they're perceived as akin to goods or commodities. And in essence, women aren't people, they're objects. And that's a result of capitalism and marketing and basically maintaining a social structure which resides on top of our economic structure. And what this structure does is it encourages men to have a collection of women and to display those women. We see the rap videos with the brother standing in the middle, and he doesn't just have one lady with him, he's got seven ladies with him, and they're half naked. It reminds me of, I just heard a story about, oh man, what's his name? Bolt, the runner. Usain Bolt. They say that when he goes to the club, he goes with three women at a time on one date. Why? To show that he's a man. To show that he's not just a man, but the man. Sexual promiscuity, as a result, is a display of manhood. Therefore, the more that you succeed in your sexual conquests, you're more of a man. And when we interview guys and they talk about this, you know what they always use the phrase, I hate this phrase, living the life. Oh man, I'm just living the life. Or I'm just getting mine. And they do so, of course, not only to the detriment of their own personal, psychological, physical, emotional health, but also to that of women. So, in the means of time, I'm not going to go over this fully, but I will say that we know that there's certain areas that men tend to have strain or conflict as it relates to their own masculinity. There's restrictive emotionality. For a man to cry, it means that you're less of a man. That's why when men get emotional, oftentimes they'll lash out in anger rather than crying, because that's an appropriate response. Of course, it's not an appropriate response, but it's what we're taught to believe it is. homophobia. A lot of this whole conversation is surrounding homophobia. For men, if you don't engage in sexual promiscuity or talk like you do or act the part, then it's immediately a question about, oh, are you gay? And as a result, the response is, oh, well, I'm not. So then you engage in the conversation or you do things that you wouldn't normally do. In fact, I've read research specific to gang rape, and a lot of it is organized around homophobic behavior, where men are in a group and they have a tight bond and they feel like, if I don't engage in this behavior with these other guys, they're going to think I'm gay. They're going to think I'm lesser than. So they do things that they probably wouldn't normally do. Socialized control and power and competition. Men feel like they have to have control. In fact, it's one of the things I measure in my research. Feel like they have to have control, because without being in control, then it means you're out of control. And if you're out of control, you're less of a man. So I want to be in control, but I also want to restrict my emotions and just lay back and be cool, not say anything, not be affectionate. These are things that are all associated with these areas of conflict. So in terms of all this, what we see is then these whole notions of what it means to be a man lead to a culture that ends up promoting sexual violence and aggressiveness against women. To be clear, the socialization of masculine identity is pervasive, and it influences every aspect of the lives of men, how they interact in social institutions, how they interact with people, how they interpret their own lives. Here we go. Here's some data. You only see X's. I had the percentages in my head. Percent reporting perpetrating sexual assault. There's a study. Actually, there's been numerous studies, and they all come out with the same, round about the same percentage. But one in particular, this in my mind, where they surveyed 814 college men, and they asked them about whether they had engaged in sexual assault against women. And they gave them a definition that was inclusive of what they refer to as rape and non-forcible rape and pushing up on women and grabbing butts and without being invited to. So it had this definition that they employed. And they found that 26% of the men in the sample said, yes, I have done that. It's a lot, 26%. Then another study that comes to mind, and I'm quoting a lower percentage because I've seen a few that were actually a little higher, percentage of men reporting pressuring women for sexual acts. Come on, can't you just give it up? Why are you tripping? No one's going to care. Pushing up harder, put your arm around her, she says no, oh, she doesn't really mean no. The men in the sample who reported this, 50%. It's amazing, 50%. We also know that when sexual assaults occur, oftentimes they're linked to or occur in concert with alcohol consumption. And it's interesting because some research points to the fact that men who engage in sexual assault, when they drink, they actually have this it's actually not even necessarily an actual reality, but they have it in their minds that they become better sexually, they become more desirable, they become these things. And so therefore they feel like pushing up a little bit harder than they normally would, or doing things that they wouldn't normally do. 76% of those men who reported engaging in sexual assault were drinking at the time, or had been drinking at the time. These are some high percentages, things we have to keep in mind. So research on sexual violence, what does it tell us? These are just some quotes from some studies that were, I found interesting. Most of them were qualitative in nature, meaning they interviewed people who had engaged in sexual violence. One is that men receive social pressure to score, right? You're with the guys, you're at the club, you see a girl, and they're like, oh man, you better tap that, man. If you haven't got that by the end of the night, man, you're a bitch, man. You haven't scored you haven't scored ever, man. I can't even remember the last time you did it. Man, I 10 girls this year. You haven't been with one. That's how the conversations look. So there's a pressure to score from other men. One, here's another one that's interesting. They did a study on high school students. And they asked them about whether they rationalized the sexual assault or sexual offense as being okay. And 42% of the sample said that if the girl led him on, or if she started to want to do it and then changed her mind, that he wasn't at fault. He wasn't to blame. That's crazy. Another one, she wants it but doesn't want to be perceived as such. That was one of the themes that came out. Meaning that she wants to have sex, but she don't want everyone to think that she's a hoe. So instead, I'm just going to push up and say, come on, baby, it's okay. This goes back to that social pressuring, right? No, it's okay. Come on, don't trip. Ain't nobody going to know. It's just me and you. What are you worried about? I got a rubber? That's how it looks. And then the last one that was interesting was get her drunk to get her ready. For men, there's oftentimes a perception that the more you have her drink, the more willing she's going to be to have sex, and that's okay. But it's not okay. But it is a very common conversation among men. You're at the club, she's not acting like she really wants to do anything. Oh man, buy her another drink, loosen her up. That's a phrase that's used a lot. I don't know if it's used a lot out here. Loosen her up. Get her another drink. Or take her back to the crib and, you know, she's not really seeming like she wants to, so let me get her another drink. Let me get another drink. And get more and more drinks until she says yes. And oftentimes men rationalize this. You know how they rationalize it? It's crazy. They rationalize it like this. Well, I'm drinking too. Even though you're really in control of your faculties. I'm drinking too, so what does it matter? I mean, we're both drunk. You know, she was in on it. I was drunk too. Shoot. It's not my fault. And then the next morning, the regret sets in. The anger sets in. The guilt sets in. And, well, shoot. I mean, you said yes. Why are you tripping? These are conversations that happen all the time. Okay, so what do we know in terms of the research on this? Sexual aggressiveness and assault against women. So here are some things that are predictors and correlates of it. I'll start with the one on the bottom. Alcohol use, we just talked about that. Physical aggression. Men that are accepting of violence are more likely to commit physical sexual aggressiveness towards women and assault. Meaning the man is like, man, I don't care, let's fight. Fuck it, let's do it, right? The guy who's always down to fight or always down to be violent or wants to take it to that next level, there's research that's shown that acceptance of this physical aggression, acceptance of violence, is a predictor. Perceptions of inadequacy of masculinity from peers. I read a study actually before this session where they had interviewed two men who had committed forcible sexual assaults. And these men had been in school environments where other students had been like, oh, well, you're less of a man. And they had been downing their manhood. So for them, a response to that from their peers was to physically abuse a woman, which makes absolutely no sense. But for them, these are men who felt disempowered as men. So the only way I can gain power is by engaging in this abuse. Men who hold negative stereotypes on women's roles is another predictor. Women should be in their place. Women should be in the kitchen. Men who hold those roles are more likely to commit sexual assault. Hostility towards women, aggressiveness. I'm amazed sometimes what guys will do. My wife teaches at San Diego State too, and just to see some of the guys in the classroom, the way they talk to her, buck up on her, try to physically intimidate. We've had master students, this is not my wife, but a faculty member in my department. We've had master students try to physically intimidate faculty. Well, though, you know what? That's a guy to watch out for, right? Physical aggressiveness towards women. Men who have lots of sexual experiences, and especially if those experiences start early on, They asked men, this is interesting. Hey, if you could get that girl and no one would ever know, would you do it? And the men who responded, yeah, I would. If I knew I wasn't going to get caught, nothing happened. Strong predictor of men who are sexually aggressive and commit assault. Misperceptions of sexual intent is, of course, another one. So this is the last slide. And before we move into our panel time, I thought it was just important for us before we do this, you know, to have a good context for the conversation that we're going to have, because the panel is more important than this foundation here. This is just to help frame what we're discussing. So men advocating against sexual abuse. So we also have to talk about what happens when a man then stands up to other guys who are engaging in sexually aggressive behavior. Men face challenges in advocating against sexual abuse. They're, again, feminized by their peers. Stop being a sissy. Really, it's don't be a bitch, dude. Man, you see, what are you doing, man? Back up. They're demonized as being non-male. What's CB stand for? Anybody? Walker. Right? Man, why are you being such a walker? Damn, dude, you know I was trying to get it in. Why are you tripping? Oh, man, she didn't want it. Man, what are you, Captain Save-A-Ho? Right? These are the conversations that occur. So then, for the few men who do stand up against this kind of pervasive culture and behavior, they become ostracized, put on the outskirts. This is not a guy we're going to invite into our social circle. This is not a guy that we're going to sit down and have lunch with. This is not a guy who's going to be one of our peers because he's not acting like a man. He's blocking. We're trying to get it in. I don't know what he's trying to do. There's something wrong with him. And those are the conversations that take place. So I know that there was a lot of offensive, you know, language that was used here to help, you know, convey this. And I hope that no one really feels offended, but it is important to just provide a real conversation, a real framework to this discussion that we're about to have, because it's too important not to do so. So with that, I'd like to invite the panel up and my co-moderator, Dr. Mary Jo Klinker, to help with this.
Thanks again to Dr. Jonathan Luke Wood and Dr. Mary Jo Klinker for their presentation, Countering Hegemonic Masculinity, today on Culture Click. Another thank you goes out to Winona State University's Inclusion and Diversity Office and the KEEP, K-E-A-P, Diversity Resource Center, who sponsored the event. More information on Winona State University's Inclusion and Diversity Department can be found at www.winona.edu/inclusion-diversity. Tune in for the next Culture Click when we continue the discussion with a panel facilitated by Dr. Wood and Dr. Klinker. I'm Terry Tenseth, and you've been listening to Culture Click.
Creating cultural awareness and understanding. You've been listening to Culture Click. Support for Culture Click is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Culture Click is produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. For more information, look us up on the web at kqal.org. And thanks for listening to Culture Click.